Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yesterday I went to a Dharma transmission in the village. I don't know, is anybody familiar with Janet and Greg Abels? So Janet gave transmission to her first student. And part of the Dharma transmission ceremony is the reading of the names in our lineage, starting with Buddha and going all the way down till today. Now, it's not literally the case. There are breaks in the list of the lineage. But part of a Dharma transmission is these names are repeated in order. And at least metaphorically, it demonstrates the transmission from the Buddha up until yesterday's transmission with Marissa, who is Janet's student. Now, if you really pay attention to the reading of that list, something really stands out. Anybody want to hazard a guess what that
is?
No
women.
Exactly. There are no women, no women's names in the lineage chart. The good news is that today, at least in the West, 50% of the Zen teachers are women. But that doesn't undo the oversight that has occurred for centuries. So I have a bunch of things that I want to put together. And rather than trying to reinvent the wheel, I'm going to read some sections from various sources that address this issue. And the first one is from the HuffPost Religion. And the title is 10 Buddhist Women Every Person Should Know. In 1966, during fall practice period at Tassajara Zen Mountain Monastery, and this is written by the Reverend Zesho Susan O'Connell, so that's her voice here, I participated in the first chanting of the names of Buddhist women ancestors. San Francisco Zen Center's abbess at the time, Ajahn Linda Ruth Cutts, led the effort and did the difficult research necessary to create this list, which began with Buddha's stepmother and ended in Japan. Tears filled my eyes when everyone, men and women, together, wholeheartedly recited these names. I had no idea until that moment how much I had missed this connection. The Buddhism we practice in the West came to us primarily through talented, kind, wonderful male teachers. The female teachers, who have always been a part of the history of transmission of the wisdom and compassion of the Buddha, have seldom been recognized or included in written history. There are many reasons for this, most of which are cultural. Even today, the women Buddhist teachers in Asia are often less valued, less respected, and certainly receive less financial support than male teachers. It is my belief that one of the most important changes that have come about in the practice of many, but not all, forms of Buddhism in the West is the equal treatment of men and women. Even in Buddhist lineages that have been slower to recognize this equality, women teachers are arising anyway. In my temple, men and women are taught together, live together, and ordained together. Because of the importance of supporting this understanding and communicating this value of equality, which began when the Buddha initiated his stepmother into his Sangha, many contemporary scholars have continued to research and acknowledge the names of these women. Because of the work of people like Reverend Grace Shearson, I am now more familiar with the women of past and present. Now, she mentions the Buddha's stepmother being initiated into his Sangha. But she leaves out the fact that his stepmother was turned down three times. Her request to enter the Sangha was turned down three times before she was let in. And even after she was let in, there were a number of stipulations attached to her presence there, which made her less than all of the men. Now, the Grace Shearson, who was mentioned in this first segment that I read, has written a book called Zen Women, beyond tea ladies, iron maidens, and macho masters. And this is a part of a review of her book, which comes from Wisdom Publications. This landmark presentation at last makes heard the centuries of Zen's female voices. Through exploring the teachings and the history of Zen's female ancestors from the time of the Buddha to ancient and modern female masters in China, Korea, and Japan, Grace Shaerson offers a view of a more balanced Dharma practice, one that is especially applicable to our complex lives, embedded as they are in webs of family relations and responsibilities and the challenges of love and work. Part one of this book describes female practitioners as they are portrayed in the classic literature of patriarchs of Zen, often as tea ladies, bit players in the drama of male students' enlightenment, as iron maidens, tough as nails, women always jousting with their male counterparts, or women who themselves become macho masters, teaching the same patriarch Zen as men do. Part two of this book presents a different view, a view of how women Zen masters entered Zen practice and how they embodied and taught Zen uniquely as women. This section examines many urgent and illuminating questions about our Zen grandmothers. How did it affect them to be taught by men? What did they feel as they were trying to fit in this male practice environment? And how did their Zen teaching training help them with their feelings? How did their lives and relationships differ from that of the male teachers? How did they express the Dharma in their own way for other female students? How was their teaching consistently different from that of male ancestors? You know, so the point is, the female expression of the Dharma should be female, not some version of male. So one more. This is from Tricycle, and it's called Roused from a Dream, and it's written by, I don't know who she is, but Mary Fowles. Rowan Percy keeps her Zen women ancestor document on her altar, wrapped in a scarf her mother used to wear. She unfolds the delicate sheet of rice paper. The names are splayed in a circle, counterclockwise, and expand like rays around an enso. Prajnaparamita, the mother of all Buddhas, and Kanon, we know as Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of mercy and compassion, are scrolled in red in the center. This document includes pre-Zen women ancestors important to the tradition's heritage. As the centuries unfold, we enter the lives of women who practiced, taught, and awakened in India, China, Japan, and last North America. Percy received this document at her Jukai, the ceremony in which one formally becomes a Zen Buddhist. It took place in 2007 at the Salt Spring Zen Circle, her small rural sangha that is tucked away on Salt Spring Island, one of the idyllic Gulf Islands that dot the southwest coast of Canada. This document honors the women in Zen Buddhist history and lore. It is considered to be the first of its kind, though no one knows for sure. Others may have been lost or destroyed in one of the upheavals that affected the documentation of women's history. The transmission of Zen until now has been documented through male lineage chart, which I mentioned. Names on that traditional lineage include pre-Zen history too, forming a chain of ancestors that links the present-day teacher to the Buddha, stretching back about 90 generations. But now, instead of one, there are two charts, the traditional male lineage and the newly created women ancestor document. This document redresses history, honoring women's names for the first time, and the documents are handed out together now in most Jukai ceremonies in Soto Zen temples in the West. Now, it was interesting yesterday when the the male lineage was chanted. At the end, there was a made mention of all the women teachers throughout time. But it was about 10 or more minutes reading the male list that was documented, and about less than a minute to pay homage to women teachers. And that's today. Now, one last thing. It's interesting that women teachers appear in the koans, but in an interesting way. So this is from zenwomen.com. Although male teachers dominated the recorded history of Zen Buddhism, many remarkable women were part of Zen history also. And some of these women appear in the koan collection. For example, case 31 of the Mumon Khan records an encounter between Zen master Tongshen, that's to forgive my pronunciation of Chinese, and a wise old woman whose name was not remembered. There's a famous meeting that took place between another old woman and Master Tenshan. And it goes like this. Before becoming a Zen master, Tenshan was famous for his scholarly commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. One day he found a woman selling rice cakes and tea. The woman had a question. In the Diamond Sutra, it is written that past mind cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped, and future mind cannot be grasped. Taishan was dumbfounded. Here's this incredible intellectual who spent most of his life on the Diamond Sutra. And the lady the woman who was selling rice cakes stumps him. Seeing his own ignorance, Taishan eventually became a great teacher himself after studying for years with a teacher. And then this goes on to talk about five women who had a vital place in Zen history who are mentioned in various koans. But again, you'll notice here, the real teacher in this story, a woman, is only described as a woman selling rice cakes and tea. So to sum up, basically there has been a quiet movement, mostly created by, almost exclusively created by women, and in many cases supported by men teacher, but it's created and has been forwarded by women. And so the voices of women are slowly now being heard again in the West. So in the spirit of all of this, let me do this. What I've done is, and this is not etched in stone because I want to hear feedback from both men, but especially women about this. All right, so I'm going to have somebody pass these out, and then I'll read it together so you'll be able to see the words. And then attached to this is the woman lineage chart that was done at the San Francisco Zen Center, which I framed and put out front. So I'll do it once, and then see if there are any questions or statements that anybody wants to make. So I called it Gatha for Women of Zen Who Swam Against the Stream. I forget, I footnoted this, but I lost my footnote list somewhere at home. But so one is an explanation of, that comes from the title of a book, which is longer. Anyway, it also mentions the Buddha's stepmother, Mahapajapati. And I think, the footnote just discusses how, what I talked to you about before, what she had to go through to be part of her son's Sangha, the famous Buddha. So the way I envisioned this as working, I tried a chanting. It didn't sound right, but maybe that's just because of my voice. But so this is the way I see it going. This bell rings for Prajna Paramita, the mother of all Buddhas. This bell rings for Kuan Yin, the goddess of mercy and compassion. This bell rings for the Buddha's stepmother, Mahaprajapati. This bell rings for the women of Zen whose names throughout history have been forgotten or left unsaid. This bell rings for the women teachers of the present so that they will always be remembered. This bell rings to remind us that the way excludes no one. So that's the chant. Please feel free to take these home if you like. You don't have to respond now. You can sit with it and see what comes up. One last point on this. Dogen, who was revered in Zen history, had women students. He did not exclude women, which is interesting. So anyway, thank you.